What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that's been elbowed by officials all season long. Today, a good Easter, bad Easter special. Good. Burnley. Better than good? Best ever, even? Bad. Micmac sacked as Seaside sojourn swiftly stops. And if you give Reading an inch, they'll take a while to sack him. Good. Preston's playoff push upgraded from plausible to possible. Bad. Forest. Green to the gills as the sickly scent of relegation permeates the hummus at the new lawn. You get the picture. Powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL. Hope you're okay, listener. It's always a big weekend, isn't it? The Easter bank holiday in the world of the Football League. We're here to run through the best bits of it. It's me, Matt Davis Adams, joined by Adrian Clark of national radio fame with TalkSport. How are you doing, Clarky?
Hello. Yeah, very good. Thank you. Yeah, and I've had a busy old weekend. I can tell that you've had the house to yourself. You know, that is a polished intro there. Lots of fancy words. Liked it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Sam Parkins with us too. Five Live, ITV. You two making me feel a bit left out. You know, I was broadcasting to my empty house this weekend. You two, darlings of the national airwaves and television transmissions.
48 hours time, you'll be commentating on a Champions League. What is it? Quarterfinal, mate. You're all right, Matt. You're all right. Favorite Easter footballing memories? Would yours be Les Ferdinand's hat trick against Nottingham Forest on the Friday, and then the three got a Goodison on the Monday? Matt,
it's
that would
up
be
there.
Mine.
Yeah, it's definitely up there. Yeah,
5-3, I think we done at Loftus Road on that sunny afternoon.
You can't beat Thierry Henry against Liverpool. Invincible season, hat trick, Easter Monday.
Oof. Nice, lovely.
Where does the fight back to earn a point at West Brom on Easter Monday rank for you then, Sam? Because I was listening to Gareth Ainsworth before we started recording, and he is buzzing. It's all going to be fine now. Give him the summer. He's going to sort everything out, and QPR are going to go flying up the table next season.
They were good. I mostly enjoyed him saying he had them in for 11 hours on Saturday. He didn't have him in for 11 hours, but I'd enjoy that. No, they were much better, much better. They kind of loaded the box, loads of balls in, and showed a bit of fight, didn't they? And maybe a bit of a formula moving forward. And I had a little look at, I know we're going to come on to Reading later, but I mean, there's no comparison between the two squads now, if that's who they're in the fight with. QPR have got everyone fit and available. The bench yesterday was really good. Reading have got kids. So yeah, it gives you hope, I suppose, now that Willock and Chair and Laird and Parle and all those guys are available.
Race to the bottom in the relegation fight in the Championship, it would seem. Well, as I say, the Easter weekend always seen as a time when things get sorted in the Football League. The only thing that was certainly sealed was Burnley's promotion. We'll talk about that and the other significant occurring shortly. But first, how about this? The guys at Quinbet, our sponsors, have enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this podcast. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Right then, let's crack on with Good Easter, Bad Easter, not featuring Jermaine Easter. Oh, well, we've got to start with Burnley, haven't we? Two of the trickiest looking games of the season on paper over Easter, starting at Borough, then hosting Chef U on Monday night. They went and won them both. The first victory on Teesside saw them promoted. They celebrated on Friday, knocked back the Nurofen on Saturday, and by Monday were ready to best the Blade. Adrian, I'm going to ask you both whether they can get the points record for the Championship shortly. But first of all, just some love for this achievement, because all the stories when Burnley got relegated last year was what a crisis they were going to be in financially, that the takeover looked as though it had them in a sticky position. It was kind of promotional bust, maybe literally, and they've got a relatively rookie manager and absolutely strolled their way through the division.
Yeah, it's been remarkable. Just think about the players that left. Been me, Tarkowski, Collins, Pope, Dwight McNeil, Maxwell Cornet, among others. You know, these were their best players. And they signed, I think, 16 new faces in the summer and got a rookie manager. And look what's happened. It is crazy. It's seriously impressive in terms of the coaching success, because this is an exceptionally well-coached team that play a brand of attractive football, but they've also got a little bit of grit about them as well. So it's the perfect blend, and Vincent Kompany deserves all the plaudits he gets. I think they might be the best Championship side that I've seen in recent seasons. The closest I can think of is Wolves, when they went up under Nuno, they were really sophisticated, really impressive. You just thought, well, they look mid-table Premier League at least. And they did better than that, didn't they, the season after. I see Burnley in a similar light. I had a look at that Wolves team. They got 99 points. Burnley will get more than 99 points. They lost 7 times, that Wolves group. Burnley have lost twice. And that Wolves team had a plus 43 goal difference. Burnley are already up to plus 48. So we're talking about a very special team here.
Sam, Vincent Kompany, obviously lauded for what he's done here. I just wonder if there's any temptation on his part to cash out now. While his stock is so high and he's being linked with Tottenham and all these kind of jobs, do you say, actually, I'm going to make the move now rather than get to October when you've got 12 points and people are wondering if you're the man to keep Burnley up and then you're not getting linked with big six clubs?
I've not thought about it as intently as you, clearly, Matt. But no, I wouldn't. I think he's got a great opportunity to go and hit the ground running in the Premier League. I know it's going to be really difficult, but I think his stock's so high now. I just think the type of guy he is, the type of reputation he had as a player, he'll get opportunities, no problem at all, even if it went badly wrong with Burnley. So no, I wouldn't see that happening. I think it suits him down to the ground, really, where he is right now. I think it's an amazing, amazing achievement. I don't remember Wolves being as elegant as this Burnley team. Maybe I'm a little bit foggy having had a few seasons since, but no, I think this team on the eye have just been amazing. I love the fact, like that Wolves team maybe and that Cardiff team that season, that they haven't had outstanding strikers. Mm-hmm. I think Rodriguez, Barnes, Obafemi, Foster I've put in there as well, 17 goals between them. Teller's recent form has taken him to 17. So they've done it with contributors all over the pitch, all over the squad. I thought the Roberts goal encapsulated the season, really. What's he doing there?
Yeah, I've thought the same.
Yeah, exactly. What's he doing there? And that kind of sums up the rotation and the movement of the side. And we've spoken so often about all the signings, brilliant recruitment, Zaruri and Benson and Taylor, obviously the loanees, but he still had, well, yesterday, Cork, Brownhill, Barnes, Roberts, Goodmanson as well, the core of players that were there, playing a completely different style of football that have all been so important for him this year. So it's not just been a completely new side. He's had to coach probably and ask these players to do different things that they haven't been doing in the last 4 or 5 seasons under Sean Dyche. So, yeah, it's been an amazing achievement. And the games are really, really favourable that remain. They go to Blackburn, I think. Other than that, they're all games you'd expect them to win. It would be a hell of an achievement because I'd imagine they're going to be half cut the days after they lift the trophy. That's when they'll probably celebrate because it seemed to me that company was probably saying, have a few beers in the dressing room and then refocus on Sheffield United. And that's obviously what they did and took care of business.
Yeah. And you talked about rotational movement, rotational selections as well. He's nailed the art of rotation this season because he hasn't picked the same team every week. He's mixed things up quite a lot, actually. And always seem to find a winning formula. So, yeah, loads of boxes ticked. I disagree with Sam on Kompany, actually. I think he should go. I know it's a really controversial viewpoint. We know what it's like. Promoted managers, what's the best Burnley can do next season? I don't know, is the honest answer. Nuno enhances reputation by guiding Wolves to a really high finish in that first season, and Kompany could do that. But the chances are they're going to get beat heavily a few times. And like Steve Cooper, because Steve Cooper couldn't have done any better, could he, last season? Yet he's been fighting for his job and to salvage his reputation throughout this season. Would Cooper have done that if he'd taken a bigger job? I don't know. So, yeah, I think if a top team comes in for Kompany, I think it'd be silly to turn it down, actually.
What he's thinking about now is trying to get this points record, 106 set by Reading in 2006. Burnley on 90 with 6 games to go, so they need to win every game in order to break it. Sam thinks they will. What about you, Adrian?
Steady. I don't think they will. No, I don't think they will. To be honest, I think they'll lose against one of the teams. That's
it's too much, isn't it? Now that you don't have the jeopardy of whether you're going up or not, their performances are bound to dip a little bit.
If they had these 6 games, you know, 2 months ago,
if one of them wasn't Blackburn away, who A, need the points, but B, want to be the team to stop them getting that record more than any other.
Yeah. I don't see them getting the record, but it doesn't detract from their achievement. They've been sensational.
On the other side of the ledger, it was a very bad Easter for Reading and Paul Ince. After the confirmation of the points deduction that saw them drop into the relegation zone, the Royals were looking for a bank holiday boost. They didn't get it. They drew with Birmingham before losing late at Preston. Here is Ince on the Deepdale defeat in what would turn out to be his final post-match interview as Reading boss.
Listen, I think it's one of those games. Listen, we're asking the same players to play again, more or less. But the first game took goals disappointing. Get tight with a man, let him roll us, and just making stupid decision making, and it's cost us every time. To be fair to them, first half had a few chances, panic, goes out for a corner, that win the header, that win the second one, and you come in away with nothing when you should have come away with a point.
So they sacked him on Tuesday, Sam. Noel Hunt's in charge for the rest of the season. Seems to be the style of the time in the Championship to promote an academy coach for an interim spell for the remainder of the campaign. Have they left it too late? Can Noel Hunt turn things round in the few games that remain? They look like a team that are going down regardless to me.
Yeah, you could make an argument for saying they've left it too late, but they would have had, they had 47 points a week ago. So the chairman, the owner, was probably just willing to let the season peter out and then revisit it in the summer. So I don't really see the sense in the Noel Hunt appointment. I know he's got experience of being Richie Wellens' number two at Swindon. I'm not sure what he's been doing subsequently. So it's a real tough order for him to get them out of trouble. I've got sympathy with Paul Ince because I understand what he's saying, basically saying that he's had a lot of injuries. He's been up against it. They've had the points penalty. I get all that. But having seen them in the flesh a few times, I'm sorry, but you can do more with the 11 that you send out. In the away games in particular, I've sat there and I've watched a team that have sat in, looked to frustrate, showed no attacking intent in games that they can win. Thinking about a game at Cardiff, thinking about a home game actually against Preston. Games where there were, and I've already said today, they've got a young bench, but there was opportunities to change the formation, to be more proactive, to play a little bit more. They've been so one-dimensional when I've seen them into Andy Carroll, and Andy Carroll's actually been quite a bright spark for him. So this isn't me having to go at Andy Carroll. It's far from it. He can't be the only option in the game to hit him from deep and hope. And they don't have players really joining in with him. Yesterday, I think the young lad Aziz came on with Fauna. Aziz was a real impact yesterday, did really well. And the Reading fans are going, why can't we do that earlier? Why can't we start in that fashion? And that, to be completely frank, has been my take every time I've seen Reading. They don't show any will to go and win games. And I think ultimately the fans have felt it's not enough. Yes, we've been up against it, but we need someone who's got a little bit more tactical awareness, or you know, a little bit more ability to change things around. And when it becomes toxic, like we say so many times on this podcast, and I think the Reading fans ultimately have voiced their frustrations in the last week or so.
Sam mentions there, Adrian, about the fact that they've had a bunch of teenagers on the bench. I guess therefore there is some logic in promoting the under-21s manager, who presumably knows a lot about these said kids, for the rest of the season. But you look at their remaining games, I mean, they're all against teams with something to play for, aren't they? If we include Coventry as having an outside chance of the playoffs, they've got to play Burnley, going for that record points total, Luton, Coventry, Wigan, well, I guess they might be down by then. But then they go to Huddersfield on the last day of the season. You wouldn't back them to get anything from that if they needed to.
No, but Huddersfield could be safe by then. You never know the way that they've gone under Neil Warnock. They've been the worst team in the Championship across the last eight games, which is going some, given how rotten QPR have been. So, you know, 3 points, no wins in that period, only 5 goals scored. And, you know, that backs up exactly what Sam was saying. What I will say in Paul Ince's defence is they very rarely got battered. They were competitive in all of their last 7 matches. It was only they either drew or they lost by 1 goal. You know, tight games, didn't concede that many goals. They were in them. They weren't a team that are a car crash under Paul Ince, but they are a team that aren't winning enough games. And that's the point that Sam's rightly made. So yeah, I get the logic of sacking him, but again, putting Noel Hunt in that, no, I don't. What if they thought he was better than Ince, then he would be the manager already, wouldn't he? No, I don't think it necessarily gives them a better chance of staying up. And the bottom line is, they wouldn't be in the bottom three if they hadn't had the points penalty. And would they have made this change if they were sat on 47 points, needing one win for survival? No, they wouldn't. So, you know, would they have made this change if Potts hadn't have climbed highest inside the box in the 92nd minute at Deepdale yesterday? No, I don't think they would. So for me, it's, yeah, I don't really get it. I would have stuck with him to the end of the season and yeah, hope they could grind out a couple of wins.
Well, linked to that, and the other side of the game that saw Ince lose his job with Preston. If I were to say to a non-EFL enthusiast, Preston are feeling low whilst looking up at the playoffs, I could be accused of talking oxymoronically. You and I, listener, know that low, in this case, is the North End boss, Ryan, who must be one of the most popular men on the north bank of the River Ribble these days. His team just a couple of goals shy of a playoff place after successive wins against QPR and Reading. And Adrian, a mark of how well they did over East, it was only them and Burnley in the Championship who picked up maximum points.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? It goes to show what kind of league it is. I mean, they haven't made heavy weather of it, I guess, you know, needing an injury time winner to see off the aforementioned Reading. But yeah, they've been very tight all season, haven't they, at the back? They haven't given a lot of way. And look, yeah, they've got something going up top. I'll talk a little bit about Tom Cannon later on. They lost Alan Brown, who's a really influential player for them, to injury. And Josh Onuma came into the side. And this one had kind of passed me by a little bit, but Onuma had cancelled his contract at Fulham a couple of months ago and signed a short-term deal at the end of the season with Preston, basically to try and prove himself, to get himself a contract. And Ryan Lowe gave him a start in this game, and he didn't let the side down. He did okay by all accounts. But Ryan Lowe, and this was really interesting, considering he's a player that was at a Premier League club, he said he hasn't had many chances the last 6 weeks. He said, but what he's done, he's got his diet right. He's doing his food preparations properly. His weight's gone down. His muscles have got bigger. He's getting fitter on a daily basis. I mean, really sort of monitoring him very closely. You know, you wonder whether Fulham just didn't care about Onuma, you know, during that last spell there. I don't know. But yeah, it was just interesting to see how detailed Ryan Lowe is. But no, it was a good win. Daniel Johnson was superb by all accounts in Brown's absence, sort of took on that leadership role, made 94 passes, which is terrific. They had a lot of the ball, as you'd expect against Reading, 66%. And they outshot them 23-8. So it's a very, very much a deserved win. And obviously in the previous game at QPR, it was a professional away win that, again, they won with something to spare. So yeah, Preston, bit of momentum coming into the playoff push.
Yeah, Josh Onuma got those two goals, I think it was, at Cardiff in a playoff semi-final for Fulham. So he's got good pedigree this time of the season. I think he's a real quality player. Gives you a bit of defensive stability, but he's great with the ball. He reminded me in that purple patch for Fulham a little bit like Dembele was for Fulham, and then subsequently Tottenham, because he can go past people, he can get you a goal. And yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think that those couple of playoff positions are still open. You thought Norwich, Watford, West Brom, one of those would have cemented one by now. But Preston come into this last run of games as the form team. And it's taken me a little bit by surprise. Mm. On the Clarkey scale, last 12, if you take Luton, Sheffield United and Middlesbrough out of the equation, of all the challengers, Preston, 15 points. That's the best. And sorry, that's the last six, Preston, 15 points. And the last 12 as well, they're top with Coventry second to their 22 points. Coventry have got 21. So they are the form side. Mm. Said they've just beaten three sides that were the best teams to play at the best moment, if that makes any sense. Blackpool, QPR, and then Reading. Perfect opposition to get you back up and running. They play three of the top six in their remaining games. Swansea away in 14th is probably the kindest fixture. Mm. So yeah, it's going to be tough for them to make it, but they come into it, and as Clarkey's emphasised, they've clicked at the top end of the pitch. And Ched Evans was the top goal scorer, obviously going to be missing for the season now. So this run of form that Tom Cannon's on puts him in good stead for the running.
Yeah, Ryan Lowe keeps raving about the team spirit. He keeps saying, like, this the bond that this group has got is just unlike any he's kind of witnessed, which I think is quite a big thing to say because he's been involved in successful teams in the past. You wonder that strong team ethic, when the pressure is on, when they're playing these big games, maybe that will play in their favour. Because you look at some of the teams around them and you wonder how much of a team they are, like a Norwich, for example, certainly a Watford. Chalk and cheese really to the unity that we see at Preston.
Well, if you believe in bonds, like a West Ham fan from the 60s and 70s, Preston 20-1 to get promoted with Quimbet. Luton, they're right in the hunt for the Premier League as well, aren't they? Adrian was at Kenilworth Road on Easter Monday to see them shore up their playoff place with a comfort behind win against beleaguered Blackpool. I wonder, Clarkie, if the fact that Luton have still technically got a chance to catch Sheffield United, that might be a good thing for them, because you sometimes see teams go into the playoffs with a few games to spare and then amble their way through the end, and then you've got to pick yourself up again. But the fact that they've still got this carrot means that they should be right at it in a way that, from what you were telling us before we started recording, they weren't at the start of the game, but they quickly became when they needed to be here.
Yeah, I completely agree, actually. Yeah, there is that. They're pushing and pushing, aren't they? And that's a good thing. The only negative I can see about that is if they keep pushing and pushing and end up third, how much is it taken out of them ahead of the playoffs? Because you don't want to peak too soon. You want to keep some energy in reserve, I guess. But yeah, no, the game against Blackpool, they were heavy favourites and they had a lot of the ball. And in that first half, they didn't really use it that well. It was an unusual situation for them, I guess, with the expectation that they'd just roll over an opponent. And they were flat. And you thought, well, these don't look like promotion candidates. But then they get a goal just on the stroke of half time. Lovely little finish from Mpanzu. And the second half, they just steamrolled Blackpool. And once they started to use that power and directness and strength and real athleticism down the side of the pitch with Drama and Doughty, Blackpool had no answers and they started to crack, basically. And that's what they do to you, Luton. You know, the two big guys up front. Adebayo got injured in the game, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there, whether that's serious or not. You'd hope not. Carlton Morris, proper handful. They're a good team, no doubt about it. I think Marvelous Nakamba got the sponsors man of the match, and I could understand, actually.
The sponsors just wanted to say it was a marvelous performance.
They're normally just pissed, aren't they? And they don't normally watch the match and they just pick someone randomly. Marvelous Nakamba, what is a really interesting player in this Luton team, because they go from back to front early a lot of the time to get the front two in the game, and Alan Campbell joins in and the wing-backs join in. But he allows them to play as well. He gives them an option. So if a team does want to drop off and protect and screen that service into the front two, Nakamba says, all right, give it to me. And he'll give and go and he'll look to probe. And he looks like he is a very good technician. So I think he's a really, really important player. He brings an element of calm to Luton. So, four home wins on the spin now, lost only twice this year. And in open play, and they conceded from a set piece in the game against Blackpool, in open play, they've let in one more goal than Burnley, which is the second best. That is outstanding. Good team. Not pretty on the eye particularly, but they are a good team. Drama has been an excellent pickup as well at right back.
So Rob Edwards' marvellous medicine should ensure there's no drama in terms of getting a playoff place. On the other side of the coin, in Bedfordshire on Monday were Blackpool. They had a conscious uncoupling with Mick McCarthy after they lost to Cardiff on Friday. And Mick Mac won just two of his 14 games in charge. Stephen Dobby's got the reins for the rest of the season. Sam, you just got to be honest, haven't you, and say that Mick McCarthy was a terrible appointment here, kind of the reverse Warnock.
Yeah, and interesting as to why it's gone so bad. I think, you know, when you're comparing the two, I think Neil Warnock was starting from a stronger position in terms of the squad. Some of the squad at Huddersfield had made the playoffs last season, so there was a bit more quality there, a bit more championship nous and experience, I would say. And Mick McCarthy, maybe it's just been a little bit too long since he's had success, maybe in the second tier. Warnock's experienced it more recently. Obviously has the experience of going into Rotherham a little bit longer ago, but doing a very similar job to which he's doing now. I think Mick McCarthy, I've always felt that Mick McCarthy is someone that I would have enjoyed to play for, but whether tactically he's got it in the same way that Warnock has, I would question. And it's going to be difficult probably for him to get a similar role when jobs become available in the next season or two. So that might be it for Mick at Championship level, I would suggest. What do you think, Clarkey, on that? I mean, I think Warnock showed again yesterday, even though it was just a point against Blackburn, the way he sets the team up defensively. Look, they rode their luck yesterday, but I highlighted the man marking of Brereton Diaz yesterday, similar to what he's done with Edmunds Green in the previous fixtures that you highlighted. Why do you think he's gone in and been so successful? And why is there such a contrast between what he's produced and what Mick's produced?
It is a good shout. I think Blackpool, from a defensive point of view, are just nowhere near as strong or aggressive as Huddersfield under Warnock. I think, like you say, the man marking set up is excellent. He's concentrated on that area. He's moved Pearson to sort of right back, and that's a lot of big guys there that can defend the box. When I looked at Blackpool, it looked like a really fragile, weak back four. And in front, you know, they've had Edmunds Green, haven't they, screening a little bit and doing things in midfield, Huddersfield. Blackpool had no one. They had Fiorini, who's a ball player. They didn't have anyone with any real bite. And I think that's the big difference. Huddersfield have got a little bit more steel and bite defensively than Blackpool, who've conceded far too many goals. Also, Warnock's a bit lucky. I've got a great stat for you. This might just be stat of the week. Huddersfield have scored 11 goals from their last 12 shots on target.
Ruthless. Efficient.
I mean, that is very efficient. I must say that one of the goals they've scored was an own goal. So you could say it's, you know, 10, but they've still scored 11 and had 12 shots on target, which... Yeah, I mean, that's not sustainable, is it? You know, they're going to have to start missing a few chances. So he's had a little bit of fortune on his side with the ruthlessness at the right end of the pitch.
All right, we'll have a little break and we'll come back. We'll talk about League One. So good in terms of League One. We're going to put Sheffield Wednesday. They're back in charge of the third tier. A point at Oxford on Friday, so-so, but they breezed past Accrington at Hillsborough on Monday. And at the same time, Plymouth was shocked at home by Lincoln and Ipswich pegged back late on by Cheltenham. Have you got Wednesday back as favourites now then, Sam? They're a point clear of second Plymouth, two ahead of Ipswich. They have played a game more than both of those two, but this was a massive win for them.
Normally I'm quite like... Across this, normally I do my last 12 games and do my points and all that. I've like neglected that, and I've just looked at Ipswich's running today. Oh, they've got to go to Barnsley, Peterborough and Fleetwood, Ipswich. So I've just got so muddled the last few weeks. I'm just sorry, everyone. Sorry to everyone. But, you know, Ipswich still are the best side. I will keep saying that. Whether they will finish in the top two, I have no idea, basically. But yeah, really... I mean, the Oxford penalty on Friday, first and foremost, against Sheffield Wednesday was a joke. And I think I've only seen it a couple of times, Clarkey. I don't know if you've witnessed it. That was never a penalty. So maybe they could have had the two victories back to back. But yeah, against Accrington, they had to win, really, considering the race at the top. And Derby at home, that's the only team they face in the top 10. Plymouth go to Shrewsbury and Exeter, but have probably got the most favourable run. So if you're looking at the fixtures, Sheffield Wednesday and Plymouth may be slightly back in the box seat, but who knows?
All right, well, we'll get Clarkey's opinion in a second. Here's a clip, though, of Darren Moore saying the phrase 3 points three times in 22 seconds.
Good 3 points. Today was just all about winning the game, really. And I'm really pleased to get the 3 points. We deserved it today. I thought we started the game really, really well and managed to maintain it through the game. We didn't really give Accrington much chance to really get a foothold in the game. So credit to the players today, and nice to get the 3 points and come away with a clean sheet.
You can understand why he was keen to emphasise it, Clarkley. They've gone six without a win. I mean, we do this every week. Who's going to finish top of League One? We each give a different answer each time, basically. So are you prepared to nail your colours to the Owls' mast after they beat Accrington at home? Or is it going to need something a bit more special than that to convince you they're back on track?
I think it's going to need a little bit more, actually. That was the first time in almost 2 months that Wednesday had opened up a two-goal lead over an opponent. So it's been a while since they had a comfy victory like this. Smith was back on the bench, which is a positive. Malik Wilkes got injured, but had been very lively, I think, up alongside Gregory at the top end of the pitch. It was interesting that Adeniran played right wing back. Really interesting because he's normally a central midfielder. Popped up with two goals. I don't know. I still think that they were playing much better football earlier on this season. They've gone. Sam touched on it there. Sheffield Wednesday have gone really direct lately. It wasn't just in this game. They're booming a lot of long balls. I don't think that's what they're best at doing, if I'm honest. I think they're better at using the full width of the pitch, making it massive and getting down the sides. So, going into the front players, maybe from the sides and linking from there. Because someone like Gregory, such a good link man. He's here, there and everywhere. Love watching him play. Sheffield Wednesday, they'll be feeling much, much better about themselves after this. But I don't think it necessarily means that their run of indifferent form is done.
All right, well... mainly me, scoffed at Darren Ferguson being appointed Peterborough manager for the 27th time back in January. But the joke's on us. Any time is a good time for Fergie time at the Posh. He's got them into the League One playoff places after scoring three times against both Shrewsbury and Exeter over Easter. Here's a question for you, Adrian. Is he more likely to get the gig full time if they don't go up rather than if they do go up?
It would be such a quandary, wouldn't it, for the owner if they went up, because every time they've gone up, they seem to come straight back down under Darren Ferguson. He is a League One genius in many ways, Darren Ferguson. I mean, you look at the points tally. I think he's got 35 points now in 17 matches. He's found a formula. Again, he's made a few little tweaks. Kind of a 4-4-2 at the moment, I guess, although he did switch it. I noticed in the game against Exeter, during the game, went back to a back three. So he's still got that flexibility. I think the left side has obviously been regenerated big time by Ogbetta and Mason Clark, the left back and the left winger, both in scintillating form at the moment. Jack Taylor in central midfield, playing some of the best football of his career, I think, right now under Ferguson. So, yeah, he's got a tune out of those boys, and they're scoring a lot of goals, aren't they? That win at Shrewsbury was even more impressive than the home win against Exeter, wasn't it? 3-0 at Shrewsbury. That's not an easy fixture at all. So, yeah, the posh have been flying ever since Sam went down to London Road.
Yeah, I was really impressed with him. I just wanted to come in there because I would have thought from afar that it was about motivation, really. Maybe that he took a step back and allowed his coaching staff to do the tactical side of things, probably on the training ground as well. But having spoken to a few of the lads and watched him firsthand, I don't think that's right. I think he's a real good tactical manager. He made some really exceptional changes in that Derby game. I spoke about it on the podcast, but about having a bit more control with the ball, also having that third centre-half in there. And he can just switch between shapes because of his personnel. And Clarkie touched on it there. I think more than maybe any team right now, partnerships all over the pitch. Edwards and Kent, exceptional. Edwards has come back in for the last few. I think he was away on international duty. And that's the first goal they've conceded in five against Exeter. And they've got the worst defensive record in the top nine. That's probably what's held them back a little bit, because we know what they're like going forward. Thompson and Ward down the right-hand side. Taylor and Norburn in the middle. Taylor's a cracking player. Another lad they took from Barnet. And
all action, isn't he? I like him.
Yeah. Really good. Can see a pass. I think he's only 24 or so. He's played a good amount of games. Him and Norburn complement each other well. And then down the left, Ogbetta and Mason Clark had a wretched first half against Derby. They've not looked back. And it was actually when he went to the three that they prospered, and Mason Clark went and played as a centre forward. But great quality, both of them, athletic. Mason Clark's got really good feet. And this is a good side. All of a sudden, I think they're averaging over 2 points a game since he came back. So I really like the look of them. It's still going to be a hell of a race, isn't it, for those last couple of playoff spots, but they're in great form.
Yeah, Poku and Clark Harris, another partnership that's developed a little bit as well. So, yeah, no, I think that's a point well made. And what I also like about Aaron Ferguson is that he's not married to one philosophy. It's not like we've got to play out from the back or we've got to do this. I'm not going to allow you to do this. When the time's right, it encourages teams to go long and just hit the channels and turn them when he thinks it's right to do so. And then at other times, he'll say, no, Let's keep the ball. Let's get it out wide and build from there. I think he's got. I think he's one of the most balanced managers around.
Probably not going to say the same about Duncan Ferguson. Here's Forest Green. We're putting them in the League One section while we can because they are going down. 14 points from safety. 5 games left to play. They have to win every game to have a chance. They will be relegated if they don't beat Barnsley at home this weekend. A strange one this summer. It's almost a bit sad, really, because Forest Green obviously get rightful praise for everything they do off the pitch. You know, the world's first carbon neutral club. Lots of great work in that regard. And generally, on the pitch, they've got stuff right, haven't they, under Dale Vince? But this has been a wretched season for him, I guess. The Ian Birchall appointment didn't work, and Duncan Ferguson really hasn't worked. And here they are, looking at a first relegation since 1955.
It's really puzzling, because you look and you think on the face of it, Birchall would have been the perfect replacement for Rob Edwards. For whatever reason, it didn't work. I think you've probably got to look at the bigger picture and look at the players that came in to replace the squad, in essence, that they lost. So I think, was it Richard Hughes at the time, maybe, who subsequently gone off to Portsmouth? I know it was a lad, Stevie Grieve, who I did my coaching badges with latterly. But they've got something wrong in the transfer market, or quite a lot of things wrong, I would suggest. And I don't get this appointment. I know Clarkey saw them recently against Sheffield Wednesday, and I'd be interested to know what Duncan Ferguson did on that afternoon to get the 3 points. It seems that without the ball, the structure's been okay in some games, and they've frustrated the opposition. Going forward, clearly a huge lack of goals, lack of creativity. 4 goals in the last 10. Got to go back to the 3rd of December for the last time they scored multiple goals in a game, which just seems incredible. But I don't get the appointment. It sounds like he's there for the long term, and the supporters seem to be buying into it. And he seems to be getting the benefit of the doubt that, you know, if he can start next season well and have a good summer moulding the squad together, then it could prove to be a real wise decision to give Duncan Ferguson this opportunity. I don't really get it right now, because I thought that it was a club with a clear plan, you know, a bit like Brentford, obviously, in the Premier League. But Forest Green seemed to have a real clear, concise idea of where they were going and how they were going to achieve it. And I'm not sure, I don't really know how Duncan Ferguson fits into it, but I don't see them every week and I don't pay my money to go through the turnstile. So I'm not as well versed as the supporters. Clarkey.
3-3-5-6-5. It's not a formation. That's the number of shots Forest Green have had across their last 6 games. I mean, that's embarrassing. That is shocking. When I saw them, they had a great shape. They didn't play with any strikers. They had 2 false nines, and they worked so hard against Sheffield Wednesday. They had great organisation. The 4-4-2 or the 4-4-6-0 was tough to break down, and they pressed and they worked hard, but they didn't create anything, really. And they don't create anything most weeks. If you don't create anything, you're not going to win many matches. And I certainly wouldn't be buying into Duncan Ferguson as a future manager of Forest Green for next season, because when they go down, they're going to expect, the supporters there will expect to be at the top end of that division. And if you're going to be at the top end of League One, you've got to be a good attacking side. You've got to score goals, and they're not playing in a way that's going to allow them to score many goals. Punching above their weight, obviously at League One level, it's always going to be hard, but yeah, there's just no punch at all up front. They need to sign a lot of better forward players to start with.
Clarkey, injuries and fatigue aside, can you tell me why Garrett, Bakayoko, McGeoch and Pert Harris weren't in the side yesterday? Has he washed his hands of the ones with a bit more experience and going with youngsters, or what's going on there?
No idea, mate. Because Garrett was probably one of the best players when I saw him the other day. Worked so hard down, I think it was the left. He was excellent, came off to a standing ovation. Pert Harris looks their most natural front man, even though he's more of a number 10. Looked a decent footballer. I know that he's got good pedigree as a youth player. Yeah, it's when a manager is under pressure, especially a rookie manager, they can allow the situation to cloud their decision-making, and they can make too many decisions. And I think that's what Duncan has done. He just keeps trying something different, hoping that one of the formulas lands.
Matt, you ain't getting away with it. Harvey Bunker was their captain on Masters weekend. Take it away.
Oh, nice.
Give me something.
But they've been below par, haven't they, all season?
There
in spite
go.
Of that.
Next.
somebody who don't appear to be playing with a handicap because they've got pots of cash are Stockport County. They're the team we're going to talk about from League Two. You can have the money, but you've got to spend it wisely. Looks like they've done just that. The Hatters up into the automatic promotion places in League Two after Easter wins against Sutton 1-0 and Newport 4-0. 4-7 on now, Clarkie, with Quimbet to get promoted. Only lost once since the end of January. Potential fly in the ointment, trips to Carlisle and Orient, but they're in great form at the moment.
Yeah, I'd back them to finish top three now that they're there. It's taken a long, long time to get there, actually. Me and Sam have been talking up Stockport for a few months now. I think we both put them in our top three when they were outside the playoffs, just because you could see what they're about. They've had goals in them all season, but actually recently they've dried up across the last eight games before the 4-0 win against Newport. They hadn't scored more than once in any of those eight games. So, but because they'd had six clean sheets, they were able to keep that points tally ticking over. So they've sorted things out at the back, really, really solid. And they've got good forwards, haven't they? Carl Wootton is banging form at the moment. He's got 14. It's some excellent ammunition as well from the flanks. Noyle, the right back or wing back, he creates a lot, doesn't he? I think he's created 41 chances this season. Hippolyte, whether he plays at wing back or in midfield, he creates a lot. And Wootton, by the way, not just scored 14 goals, he's also the player that's created the most number of chances for Stockport in League Two this season. So he's a good all-round centre-forward, someone that obviously can knock the ball down for others as well. So yeah, they're looking good. I think they'll stay in the top three.
Yeah, Clarkie scale. Best team over the last 12. So in good stead. They've got to go to Gillingham as well, though, Matt. Gillingham, Carlisle, Leighton Orient. I think all in the, certainly in the top half, but the recent home form, very, very good. So they are three really difficult away games. And the other point I wanted to make, completely agree with Clarkie. It's a bit old school, if you like. Loads of balls wide, whipped into the area. Two really good wing backs. I think they've got six assists each, although I think Noy was at Doncaster, wasn't he, start of the season? So he got a few there.
Yeah.
Looked at the bench yesterday. Hussey, two promotions. Sarcevic, promoted with Fleetwood. Madden, two promotions. Can't get in the team at the moment. There's really good experience there. People that have done it. People that did it last season from the National League. So whether it's automatically or via the playoffs, they're a good bet, as I've been telling you all season. Give us the odds, Matt.
Have a quick look. Watch the goals back or watch the highlights of Stockport games. The pace they play out inside the final third is fast. It's faster than a lot of the other teams in the division. They're playing a brand of fast, efficient football.
4-7 on then to go up, as I say, with Quimbet. We'll see if those odds change after those tricky away days. All right, that was good Easter, bad Easter. Next today is the triumphant return of the Scouting Report. Scouting Report is back, and Adrian has picked a goal machine. He's got them in his arsenal. He fires off shots left, right and centre. That's about as much as I can come up with on the fly for Tom Cannon. Buns, we measured him last week. He's kicked on even further since then.
He really has. Look, for Preston North End fans, try not to fall in love with the Alonese, because this is another player that they're absolutely adoring right now, like they did last season with Cameron Archer. They were heartbroken when he sort of had to go back and didn't return. And I suspect that Cannon's doing so well that he might not be with Preston North End in the future. But yeah, seven goals in 14, six in his last six. He's only 20 years of age, Tom Cannon. So that's a very good return at Championship level. Sam and I only played a few games at Championship level. Sam played more, but it's a tough league. So for a 20 year old to come into it and shine like he is, I think is very, very impressive. Certain attributes that really stand out to me about Tom Cannon. One is pace. He's got good speed. He plays off the shoulder of defenders and wants to run in behind. And from 1v1s, we saw one of his goals against Queen's Park Rangers, ran in behind, didn't he? Composed himself, stuck it through the keeper's legs. On international duty, he did exactly the same for Ireland under 21s. And I think his first goal in Preston colours came with a near identical move, ran off the shoulder of the defender, 1v1, and he passed it in off the far post. And that is probably the next feature that I want to talk about, is just that composure when you come to the finish. So he's got the pace to get there. And then in those moments, almost all of his goals are passes, just tickles it in. Two have kissed the inside of the post and gone in. One through the keeper's legs, just very, very calm, lifted one over a keeper as well. He's obviously a natural, but I would also credit Ryan Lowe, because Ryan was a striker and I suspect he would have done a lot of work on the training ground, saying you don't need to spank the ball, don't need to knock the spots off it, just stay calm in those moments that matter. And he's definitely done that. So yeah, he looks a good centre forward, not the biggest, but he's got pace, got composure, very smart movement. Saw that for his goal against Blackpool, where he started on the left and spins inside to receive a ball in space. And from there, he runs at the guy and scores. So, yeah, he's a hot prospect, no doubt about it. I think we're going to be hearing the name Tom Cannon a lot in the years to come.
Yes, and a tickle, but no spank from Cannon. Sounds like a fun night in Preston to me. Sam, Ephraim Mason Clark. If you're a Peterborough player with a double barrel surname, you're in the shadow of Johnson Clark Harris, but this lad's doing all he can to step out of it. Four goals in his last six games.
Yeah, I'm not sure he is. I'm all over this lad. I've not been across the Peterborough Evening News, but I don't know how much they're loving him down there, but I thought he was excellent when I saw him. I had to wait till the 22nd of October for his first start. And this is his first year in the EFL, and I looked back at what he did previously for Barnet. He played 163 times for Barnet, 19 goals and 10 assists, so 29 goal involvements. He's got 15 goal involvements and 25 starts in his first year at League One level, which I think is exceptional. Versatile. I've seen him play left of a midfield four, the 4-2-3-1 that Clarkey referenced earlier, wide on the left. And in the second half against Derby recently, played as a second striker. And it was because Darren Ferguson identified a bit of a lack of mobility with Forsyth, right-sided or the middle of the back three, as he was for Derby. 1 minute into the second half, or whatever it was, Mason Clark pulling into that exact area of the pitch. Lovely step over past Forsyth and cracked a beautiful shot home with his left foot. So intelligent, taking on tactical instruction, versatility that I've spoken of already. Two good feet. That's his only goal with his left foot so far this season. Six with his right, one header. And on his goals, quite scrappy, some of them, but getting in on the far post. So when Ward, invariably on the right-hand side, or Thompson's delivering, getting into the six-yard box, thinking and moving like a striker, which is a good trait. And I think he's got the capability to score the spectacular ones, undoubtedly, as he did against Derby and at the weekend against Exeter. Really smart finish. And again, in the centre-forwards position from a Norburn, I think it was kind of raking long ball, the ability to just lift it over the goalkeeper. So I think this is a really talented boy with the potential to move on, like so many of his previous peers at Peterborough. Quite erratic, maybe. 13th for successful dribbles, and I noticed on Who Scored, he's kind of the top of the dispossessed list in more or less every game. So he's trying things, maybe needs to tidy up his decision making, but yeah, I've been ever so impressed with him. And yeah, he could have a really telling end to the season if Peterborough are to make it into the Championship. I think he's coming into form at exactly the right time.
It's not like Peterborough, is it, to give young players a chance to shine and to let them shine and then maybe sell them on for quite a lot of money.
About the location there as well, maybe? I don't know. It feels like there's a lot of non-league teams in that stretch of the A1 or just northeast of London, and they just seem to... Yeah, just hoover them up, don't they? It's hoover them up a phrase. But
yeah.
Barnet to Peterborough feels like a oh, Barry Fry, isn't it? That's why I'm going there. It's Barry Fry. Bazza goes to basically every game and just puts money on the table.
All right, that is Ephraim Mason Clark and Tom Cannon, the subjects of this week's scouting reports. We are just about done for today, but of course I've got a tweet of the week for the chaps to run the rule over. This one came from Danny Lloyd of Rochdale. This is after their win on Friday. We mentioned GIFs last week. He's actually quote tweeting his own club goal GIF. Even you two will know what these are. It's where the club tweets a goal out and the player is doing some kind of celebration. He pops up, then goes back down again, and then he pops up and celebrates, showing off his muscles and tattoos. So he's quote tweeted this. the tweet of his goal, but he hasn't used any grammar, which is what I'm a bit concerned by. He says, another big plus three for the boys. Massive shift again from the lad. Showed great fighting character to go and win and the game. Focus on Monday now. Another massive game. Thank you for the support again. Top tier. Muscly arm emoji, blue heart emoji at officially Dale. Sam, has he just bashed this out while the adrenaline and monster energy drinks are still pumping through him, and that's why he's forgotten to put the odd comma or even a full stop in?
I can't have a go at his punctuation, although I spend too many hours staring at my phone, making sure or asking, like, invariably Louise, if it's a comma or a full stop or a dash or what, basically what has to go there, because I am the king of putting something in the wrong position. But I suppose, you know, if you're wanting an honest critique on it, there's a lot in there that I don't like. You know, I think I've set my stall out across the campaign, the podcast campaign so far, which are a big no-no from me. And there's a lot there. There's a lot there. Yeah, don't mind the old muscular bicep emoji. I like the little gif, but that's the Rochdale admin who's going to get the credit there. So it's poor, Danny. It's not anywhere near as good as your recent form, my friend.
Clarky, I quite like his pinned tweet, just looking at his profile now. This is more in our wheelhouse, I think. It's from the 17th of February, 2020. What a weekend, comma, engaged, ring emoji, first baby emoji, and 3 points, praise emoji. Hudson John Lloyd McGoldrick, comma, 17th February, 2:25 a.m, heart eyes emoji. You've changed our lives so much already. We both love you to pieces. Couldn't wish for a better fiance and mother to my son. At El Barlow, you are a machine. And that's the kicker for me there. He's actually referred to his wife or fiance in footballer's terms, presumably not very long after she's given birth. If the first week we mentioned was sloppy, that one's all class.
It's outstanding. No wonder he's pinned it. And no wonder it's still there from February the 17th, 2020. It was, yeah, you're not probably not going to get any better than that. Probably if his fiance, I don't know if they're married now, you know, he describes her as a machine. Maybe she's got some advice to pass on in regards to punctuation, a little bit like Sam's missus. Maybe he could just lean on her before he sends out these tweets post-match. That's the only advice I can give him moving forward.
Okay.
Sorry, Matt. The first reply is from Tyrese Sinclair, calling him just one word, bagsman. I don't want to get into football cliches territory because I know they've covered this before, but Ian Henderson's the only bagsman as I see it at Rochdale, right? Danny Lloyd, he got 22 in 41 at Stockport. That quantifies as a bagsman, but 5 in 20 at Rochdale. Not sure that's up-to-date statistics I've given you, but what does quantify a bagsman? It's more than what Danny Lloyd's producing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hendo's the only bagsman at Rochdale.
He scores good goals, Danny Lloyd, if memory serves me right. But yeah, now bagsman's a goal pig, isn't it?
Scorer of great goals hasn't got the same ring to it, but that would have been more on point, right, Tyrese?
Danny Lloyd update after the 1-1 draw at Mansfield on Easter Monday. Big point, comma, incredible effort from the lads. Had our chances to win the game, full stop. Move into a big two games next week, full stop. Away support was top quality all game, thank you. Blue heart emoji, muscly arm emoji at officially Dale. So he's learned his lesson. He has punctuated that correctly throughout, and that is
muscly arm emoji, tickled me there.
That's what it is, isn't it? Muscly arm emoji. It's a muscle arm like that, like mine. Anyway, well done, Danny. Reacted and improved, which is what we're all looking to do. Before we go, a reminder of the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35 for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. If people want to follow us on social media, Adrian, how can they do that?
They can follow us on Twitter at EFL Whatthe, and they can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at WhatTheEFL. Apologies, last week was just a little bit manic for your social media secretary. Wasn't a lot of content coming out of me, I've got to say. But I will try to raise our game moving forwards. But yeah, it'd be great to get a follow, and it helps us spread the word. So yeah, if you enjoy the pod, give us a follow. Tell your mates on social media, and yeah, hopefully more and more ears can get to hear us.
Do it. We'll be back next week with another show. Who knows what will have happened in the always busy world of the Football League between now and then. Thanks to Sam and Adrian for joining us today, and for you too, listener. We'll be back again soon. Bye for now.